So hard, my bass and fun.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. They can't identify me. Checked in with a pseudonym, so I guess you could say I'm Mark Twaining. Read so hard,
that shit cray.
That shit cray.
Ain't it, eh?
Read so hard,
what you reading?
What you reading?
D-Montaigne.
Read so hard, you use a Kindle? I carry spines, supporting bookshelves like a bra. Calvin Klein.
Hi, you're listening to Drunk Booksellers. My name is Kim.
And I'm Emma. And we are professional booksellers.
And casual drinkers.
Today we're talking to Sam Koss, the events coordinator at Village Books in Bellingham, Washington. Welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So Sam, since you picked the drink tonight, why don't you introduce it?
All right, so tonight we are drinking Left Hand Milk Stout, which is a pretty awesome beer that I really like from Colorado. I don't know, I was just feeling like a stout for some reason. I thought about getting a Bellingham beer for you guys, but I wasn't sure if you could actually find it over.
I had enough trouble.
I felt kind of bad about that, but you know, I think the other option I was saying was Rainier Tallboys, and that just wasn't sounding appealing to anybody. So yeah, I heard that
Liberty already made us drink PBR, so
yeah, we can't do too much of that. That's not okay. But yeah, apparently a milk stout is what happens when they actually add lactose to the beer. I did not know that. I learned that recently. And it makes it sweeter. So that now you know everything I know about beer, except that I like to drink it.
Well, Sam, I really appreciate that we're drinking a Colorado beer, since the reason we currently have you on the show is that we all got to hang out in Denver at Winter Institute like 2 months ago.
Yep.
So this is really great, actually. I think it ties in nicely, so well done, sir.
Yeah, that's cute.
It does.
Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking of that. Feels like just yesterday, guys.
Okay, so now that we've done the literary drink, Emma, what are you reading right now?
I'm so glad you asked.
You're welcome.
So I'm reading the fifth and final installment in the Fairyland series.
Oh, bittersweet.
Yeah, I'm going really slow, which is funny because it's called The Girl Who Raced Fairyland All the Way Home, and it's really good. And I feel like there's really nothing more I can say about Fairyland than I've already said. It's amazing, and I'm still planning on getting a tattoo.
It took me a good, 5-second delay to get your joke there, but I just want you to know I appreciated it.
Okay. I'm also reading The Bus Driver Who Wanted to Be God by Edgar Caret for my book group, which I almost forgot about. It's fine. I'm enjoying it. The stories are so short that they might be flash. I'm having trouble thinking of what we will talk about at my book group, because they're all kind of like punchline-y, which is not bad, but it does not really book group conversation make. But
yeah.
And then, so I realized that I hadn't talked about this book yet, so I wanted to bring it up. I'm not reading it now. I finished it maybe in January. The Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande, which it'll change your life because checklists literally save lives. And that's really all the convincing I needed to read this book. It's true. They literally save lives.
Checklists also make author events run a lot better, let me tell you. So I am a believer.
I bet.
Emma, have you read Being Mortal yet, which is Gawande's more recent buzzy book?
No. Is it about productivity?
No.
I probably don't have time to read it. Next on my nonfiction list is Getting Things Done, and after that is Long Tail Economics or Naked Money. I haven't decided. Let's let our guest go next. I feel like we always talk first.
I guess. Okay, fine. Sam. Hey, Sam, what are you reading?
Hey, what am I reading? Let's see. Right now, I'm reading, 3 books. I'm one of those people who reads a bunch of books at once. So right now, I'm reading a book, a novel called Clinch by Martin Holman, which is coming out from Pushkin Press in June. And it's kind of a dark, noirish novel. Apparently the first in a series set in Stockholm in the 30s. Starring a ex-boxer named Harry, who is now a kind of freelance debt collector, and he ends up accused of murder. And this presents him with a little bit of a conflict, and he has to go into the seedy underbelly of Stockholm, which was not something I knew existed. but it's pretty good so far. I'm nice. About a third of the way through. It's pretty enjoyable. Working on Goodnight, Beautiful Women by Anna Noyes, which is a story collection that had a lot of buzz actually attached to it at Winter Institute. Very good so far. I don't want to, like, pass judgment on it until I've actually finished it, because, you know, with short stories, it's you kind of will have a different flavor maybe at the end of the collection than you will at the beginning. I always kind of want to read the whole thing before I really pass judgment on it. But so far, it's a really kind of a powerful, subdued collection of sort of vaguely interconnected stories set in Maine and in New England. And really masterfully written. And then I'm also working on Ruth Ezeki's A Tale for the Time Being, which I think I'm the last person in Bellingham who hasn't read that book. It's wonderful. I highly recommend it. And she's going to be here in Bellingham in March, so I'm looking forward to hanging out with her. But that's the top of my towering pile.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a pile right now, too. So I'm currently reading Eruption, The Untold Story of Mount St. Helens by Steve Olson, which is coming out in March. And it's really fascinating, I think, in particular, because we've been, at least in the Pacific Northwest or on the West Coast in general, talking a lot about natural disasters and what that means for our current lives. And so I think there's a particular fascination right now with, you know, tectonic plates. The other one I am just about to start is the Neil Mukherjee book, A Life Apart. His previous novel was shortlisted for the Booker, I believe, called The Lives of Others. And this one, A Life Apart, is a immigrant from an Indian immigrant living in London. That is literally all I know about it, which is from the back of the book because I am like three pages in. But I'm really excited. It looks fantastic. And I just finished Curb Stomp, which is a comic that Boom came out with, which is distributed by Simon & Schuster. It seems kind of like Boom's response to Bitch Planet, which I think I've talked about in the past, that really puts feminist issues and the prison industrial complex in the forefront. Curb Stomp kind of does that to a similar extent. It's about a girl gang and kind of the ways in which they are existing in a gentrifying space, as individuals of color and various minority identities, and how they are kind of with girl power, I guess, is a really shitty way to put it. But you know, existing in the world and really owning it in a certain way.
See, because it's made by Boom, I'm just imagining it in like a very sweet Lumberjanes Bee and Puppy Cat kind of illustration.
It's not Lumberjanes or Bee and Puppy Cat. There's definitely some sass to it in a very Lumberjanes-y manner, and it's not quite as intense as Bitch Planet is, but it is not an all-ages comic.
Please don't ruin my dream. I'm imagining a twee Bitch Planet, and it sounds awesome.
Okay, so Curb Stomp is a twee Bitch Planet. It's pretty much Emma's wheelhouse, so go buy that. Okay, so Sam, each episode we talk about the books we're excited about that are forthcoming, so at this point we're mostly talking March.
Disagree. I'm talking April.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I got some Aprils in here myself, but...
Okay, you know. So March and April, your forthcoming titles, what are you excited about?
Oh, let's see. Well, actually, one that now it's not forthcoming, but it's only not forthcoming as of like a week ago, is Welcome Thieves, Sean Bowden's collection of short stories. Mm-hmm. Really great. I'd flipped through some of his books before just because he always would have a premise that would really appeal to me, and then the jacket copy would be really cool, and then I'd never pick the book up. But I'm very, very glad I picked these up. I'm a big George Saunders fan, and he's possibly like a more punk rock George Saunders in his approach to adult short stories, which is very much my wheelhouse. So I'm very excited about this little collection from Algonquin, which, like I say, just hit the shelves, and it's just a wonderful. It is. I think in the first story is about a kid who joins a band with his friend, and then they grow up and grow apart, and he kind of holds on to his rock and roll dreams. And about halfway through it, I realize, oh my God, this is me and my friends and our pathetic lives as people who never became rock stars. And then you just start laughing a little bit harder. I think in most of the stories that I read in this collection, I kind of had that aha moment where it's like, oh, wait a minute, I know this person. This is me. That's not good. But it really has that kind of, and I've always felt that about like George Saunders stories as well, that they always kind of have that that moment where you realize you're kind of reading about somebody you know very, very well. I think that they mm-hmm. both have that sort of observational ability. So I thought that this was just a fantastic, it's kind of his adult debut, and I thought it was just a fantastic read. I'm kind of foisting it on everybody this month. So nice. that's a big one for me.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's really worth picking up. And he's funny, you know. I mean, that's the other thing. He doesn't make you feel too bad about it. he's a crack up. I'm also really excited. Can we go to April now? Can we do some April?
Yeah, I'm okay. In April.
You, all right, you good. Do you, man.
Good. Dodgers, Bill Beverly. An interesting novel. This one was another one that's been buzzing at the conferences and everything. It is Random House. It is it starts out in Compton, kind of in the gang community there. The protagonist East is he's watching a drug house for his uncle. That's his job. It's all he's ever known. He's never left a few blocks in Compton, and he basically something gets messed up, and he gets sent out of town. And his new job is to go with three other guys in a minivan into the Midwest to Wisconsin to commit a murder, to take out a federal witness. And what happens is, as soon as they leave this kind of these four boys, they're like between the ages of 14 and 16, and they live these incredibly violent lives. And as soon as they leave the city limits of LA, basically everything that has ever governed their existence just starts to disintegrate in really interesting ways. And it is one of those books that just kind of keeps you glued to it, because it is a riveting read, but it's not because it's such a riveting read so much as it's like nothing you've ever really read before. Because it's taking characters that you might have experienced, or you might have some preconceived notion of, and taking them outside of the environment that you'd expect to see them in. And the results are really fascinating and really, really wonderful, in a sort of brutal way. And so it becomes kind of a book about family. It becomes a book about who you are, you know, about your identity and whether you can reinvent your identity. So it's definitely, it is just for that, I think a pretty fascinating read. And I thought that it was, I do believe it's a debut novel. But it's a very mature novel, I think. So I've been really excited about that one, which is, I think, early April.
What's nice. The title again?
Dodgers by Bill Beverly.
I feel like that was on my radar at one point, and then I kicked it off my radar because I got distracted by other things.
That never happens to me.
Emma, what are you excited about?
Okay. So I was scrolling through Edelweiss because I haven't done that in like a month, and on like the first page is some book called The People in the Castle, and the subtitle is Selected Strange Short Stories, and it's by Joan Aiken, who I've never heard of, but it's published by Small Beer Press.
On.
And that's all I know, and that's all I care about. It's gonna be great.
For those following us at home, Small Beer Press is Kelly Link's press that she runs with her husband, so there's our Kelly Link bingo box for the day.
You have to do it once, don't you?
Yeah. At
it's
got to
happen. It's got to happen.
Cavill and D. Kelly Link, first 15 minutes.
There we go. There we go. Okay. Nice. No, that sounds great. Have you started it yet, or?
I literally just downloaded it.
Okay, cool. Rad.
Also, there's a book coming out, that's coming out in April, and then there's this YA book coming out in April called Scarlett Epstein Hates It Here, and I don't normally seek YA out, but this was described as Daria meets Veronica Mars, so...
Nice.
I'm in.
Mm-hmm. I have heard really good things about that book, actually. Yeah.
And obviously, I'm interested in Goodnight Beautiful Women by Anna Noyes, because Kim told me to pick it up at Winter Institute, and Sam told me that I should also read it, so...
Well, I think those are two very trustworthy sources, my friends. Yeah. So.
So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Nice. Yeah, March and April have got a lot of really great stuff coming out. We've already talked a lot about The Molly Prentice, Tuesday Nights in 1980, which I was freaking out about a while ago, so I won't go too in-depth about that. But there's some really great nonfiction that I'm excited about. There's Olivia Lang. It has The Lonely City coming out, which she's the one who wrote A Trip to Echo Spring. On writers and drinking. And so she does these sociologically based, like, kind of memoir, kind of narrative, essay, culture studies. And this is about art and loneliness, which just sounds so good. So I'm really excited about that. That's coming out March 1st. Also on March 1st, there's a book called All the Single Ladies, Unmarried Women and the Rise of an Independent Nation.
Oh, yeah, I downloaded that.
Yeah, by Rebecca Tracer. And one of my coworkers has been reading it, who also loved Spinster. By Kate, who is that? Kate Bullock. Yeah. And it seems like All the Single Ladies is a little less memoir-y, bio-based. Spinster was, it was a biography of multiple women who have essentially lived the spinster life.
Yeah. I think it was really more of a memoir of one woman through the lens of a biography of multiple women. And it was great. I just think that they missold it. I think that people were upset that it was about Kate because they were expecting it to be about women. And I thought it was great. Plus,
so here's the thing. Yeah, the paper dolls were really cool. So here's the thing. All the Single Ladies is actually about kind of the more like sociological, like, larger picture.
So the title would suggest.
As yes, exactly. And it's less the biography memoir thing, and it's just sounds fantastic. And I'm going to stick to March cuz that's what I thought we were doing. Want to also give a shout out to a fiction book that I have not read. It's called Jane Steele by Lindsay Fay.
Oh yeah.
And it is a retelling of Jane Eyre, in which Jane Eyre is a serial killer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I need to say anything more than that.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So Sam, we normally start off by asking for the bookseller's origin story. So
kind of like a superhero's origin story.
I mean, come on.
I should have made something really good up for this.
So you got bitten by a bookworm as a child.
Obviously.
Struck by lightning.
There you go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that I ever had any choice. I don't know that I necessarily believe in destiny, but if I do, I point to my career in bookselling as proof of it. I mean, I grew up, obviously I was a kind of definitely a bookish kid, a pretty voracious reader. I know you're shocked, right? And I actually grew up here in Bellingham, so I spent a lot of time hanging out in a certain bookstore in Bellingham as a kid. And I decided for a number of different reasons to stay in town after high school and go to Western, the university here. They had a good English department at the time. I was thinking about either going into journalism or actually going into secondary ed, and they have a really great education department up there as well. So I stayed in town, went to Western. Was selling lawnmowers, actually, at Sears. Nice. I will never buy a bad lawnmower as a result of my 6 months doing that. And I had applied a couple of times over the years to work at Village Books. And finally, I just I applied again, and like 2 days later, it turned out they were hiring. I interviewed. They hired me as just a frontline part-time bookseller, college job. And it about a week later, maybe, it just occurred to me that I would probably never be able to do anything else with my life. it was just like, okay, this is it. Now I'm kind of at the point where it's like, man, I don't know how to do anything else. I can't imagine doing anything else. I've done just about a huge number of different jobs. At the store, I was in charge of the ebook program for a while when ebooks were a big deal.
When those were a thing.
And I was I was the community outreach coordinator, so I handled our donations program and went to Chamber of Commerce breakfasts and stuff like that, which was totally an experience. I was just a frontline full-time bookseller on the floor for a couple of years, and now I'm the events coordinator, which is definitely, I think, the best suited job for me so far that I have that I've had there. So it just kind of clicked for me, and all of my friends are pretty much book people now. Yep. And that is exactly the way I want it.
Book people are the best people.
Book people are the best people.
Yes, I'd say so.
I'm kind of obsessed with your store, mostly because when I first started bookselling, I found a copy of the store owner's book about opening Village Books.
It Takes a Village Books.
Which is a great title. But Chuck is kind of a pillar in the bookselling,
bookselling world. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about Village Books and like the history of the store? And...
Absolutely. So, I mean, Village Books started out in 1980, June 20th, 1980, I think.
Wow. You know a lot more about that than I would.
So. It was sometime in June. You know, we always celebrate our anniversary like the weekend of the 20th, like the second weekend in June. So that, I just have that date in my head. But but anyway, it was June of 1980. Chuck and Dee had actually quit their jobs. In the Midwest, they were teaching, and they just decided they wanted to get out of town. So they got an RV and sold their house and drove around the country looking for a good place to open a bookstore. And they finally arrived in Bellingham, Washington, which is about 90 minutes north of Seattle for our listening audience.
Did they like miss the I-5 turnoff for Canada or something? How did that happen?
I don't actually know. I know that they spent some time in Anacortes, though. The folks at Watermark Books down there were actually a big inspiration and gave them a lot of advice when they were opening up. So, you know, I don't actually know how they wound up in Bellingham specifically. But at that time, you know, now Bellingham's kind of a destination. At that time, it was a little bit quieter. So they definitely, it was kind of a ghost town at that time. But they opened up in a little. It was a little storefront that was actually half of what is currently our gift store, Paper Dreams, which also houses our cooking section. So we've expanded a little bit over the years. And then in 2004, we built our current building for the Fairhaven store, which is about 15,000 square feet. It's three floors. And so now we have a lot of gift items, what we used to refer to back in the day as sidelines. You know, there's so much of the business for us now that it's like, they're not really sidelines, they're kind of part of our thing. And we have those integrated, and then we have a couple of book sections that are integrated into the Paper Dreams part of the building. And then it was the end of November 2015, we opened up our second location up in Linden, which is a much smaller community, about 20 miles north of Bellingham. So actually right on the Canadian border, they have a border crossing there. And that's a much smaller store. The store hasn't really been open long enough for it to have developed its own really unique personality, but I feel like it's starting to, like it's going to be, and that was always something that I, kind of was interested in when I talked to like friends of mine who work at Third Place Books in Seattle, where they'd say, yeah, we have three locations, where they at the time they had two locations, they're working on their third location. They'd say, you know, they have very different flavors. You know, if you go from store to store, it feels like the same store, but it's also very different.
We definitely dealt with that at Word when we were opening up, because the original store was in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and the second store is in Jersey City, which has been, you know, really developing a lot in the past few years. But there's definitely something to say for allowing the community to dictate what the store is going to be, as opposed to trying to force a former store into a new community space.
Oh, I think that that's what you have to do. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's... Bookstores are living, breathing Wordanisms, if you ask me. They don't... They have to be kind of adopted by a community and formed by a community. There's no other way to go about it. I mean, that's how you create a good bookstore, is you let it create itself. You let the community create it. You know, and we just kind of listen to them.
What a concept. But
I know. So it's definitely, it's a very different feel from Bellingham, but it's a really receptive community for us and, really receptive to us. And, that community is starting to kind of flourish again in a way that I think it hasn't in a while. So it's cool to be part of that too, and see that sort of main downtown area sort of come alive again.
Nice.
Okay. So before, you were saying that you felt that the events job was kind of, it seems to be what you're most well suited to. And I was kind of curious what about the events job fits your personality and what about your personality fits the events job?
Well, you know, I have trouble with the whole concept of the extroverted introvert. I feel like that's having your cake and eating it too. In any case, I'm definitely a person who does really well engaging with people out in the world, and I don't think there's a better job for that than, I mean, book selling in general, but being involved in events is a great way to kind of be part of a really, you know, I don't want to say a performance, but it does kind of have that feel to it, to kind of get out there and bring your community into a space and have them engaging with an author and really kind of, there's a special kind of magic that goes on there that I really kind of enjoy. And, you know, I like dealing with authors. I like creative problem solving, and there is an awful lot of that in the events world. I love meeting authors that I admire and meeting authors I've never heard of, and kind of discovering them that way.
What was your favorite event that you've run?
Oh man, you know, there are a few. One that's a standout always has been the couple of times I've hosted Tom Robbins in the store.
Oh, nice.
Of course, Tom is a Pacific Northwest hero and a legend of the counterculture.
Mm-hmm.
And he is exactly the way you would expect him to be when you host him for an event. So he's come a couple of times during my tenure in the store, and once I was kind of on point for the event that day, and spent most of the day getting ready for that event because it was a free afternoon reading, so it was, you know, we knew it was going to be packed, and luckily everything in our space is on wheels pretty much, so we can move it out, and you know, so I spent a huge amount of the day doing that, and finally I let Tom in through the side door and, you know, bring him in and get him settled down and kind of get him prep for the reading. I go out to check something and I come back inside. And I say, you know, is there anything I can get for you? You know, we're about 20 minutes out. He looks at me really sincerely for like several beats, like he's really thinking about this. And he says, "Do you have a pocket road map of Venezuela?" I'm like, yes, I probably do. And, you know, so that has always been a joy.
Wait, why did he want a pocket road map of Venezuela?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Was that for the reading? Like, was he going to be talking about something in regards to Venezuela? Or was he just like, I think we're going to Venezuela? Like,
I think it was just the first thing that he came up with. I think that's just... He knew he had to answer me.
All right, so I have a question. So, okay, readings are boring, right? Like, just straight up readings are kind of boring.
You just broke my heart. No, okay, finish your question.
What events, I feel like, you know, maybe some people listening are looking for better ideas than just straight up like an author reading their book. I mean, not all authors are performers. Not all authors are good at doing readings. So, you know, we've seen
it's
panels.
True.
What is the most interesting like way an event has shaped out for you?
You know, there are, again, the possibilities are endless. The probably the least interesting events that we do are the ones that are straight readings, and especially with the author just sitting there. Oh, I was just giving you shit, my God.
Calm down, Emma.
But anyway, if an author's just going to sit there and with their face down to the podium reading from a book, they're going to lose people's attention pretty quickly. I see a lot of people come through with visual presentations if they're nonfiction, and even if they're fiction, Len Vlahos does a really good job of creating multimedia presentations for his young adult novels.
He is also a
very experienced performer. He's really good at it, but he's a great example of somebody who actually, you know, plugs in a PowerPoint presentation and goes for it, even though he's writing fiction. So I think it translates to both. One of the events that we do on a regular basis, about 10 times a year, is actually a radio variety show, kind of loosely modeled after like a Prairie Home Companion. And it was something that we started like 10 years ago. It was when Eric Larson was touring, I think, for Thunderstruck. And so we thought it would be, we have a radio museum, a radio and electricity museum in downtown Bellingham. And so we thought, oh, this would be a great tie-in. So they started this radio show just, you know, for a couple episodes just to try it out. It's been 10 years now, and it's going strong. It's a ticketed event. And so it's actually an hour-long show that's got a skit, really corny jokes that are, you know, so bad they're good. There's usually a musical guest, and then there's the author portion is actually takes the form of an interview. And that consistently draws a good crowd. Kind of an inventive, sort of a creative event format that we've used. But we see all sorts of different things.
What are your tips on how to create an event that will draw in a community?
Community partnerships are a big thing. If you're doing an event that, and this may sound obvious, but that's a book about classic films or something. Do you have an independent art house cinema in town? I bet they would love to co-promote your event with you. Partnering with community organizations is the number one thing that has made a lot of our events really big events. The other thing is have a lot of events. And this is actually something that we stole directly from Elliott Bay probably before I was born. In the first couple of years of operation of the store, they were having trouble, you know, Chuck and T were having trouble bringing people in for author events. So they called up their pals at Elliott Bay and said, hey, what do we do about this? And the answer was people shouldn't be calling the store to ask if there's an author event tonight. They should be calling the store to ask what the author event is tonight. We do an author event almost every night of the year now. Sometimes we do two or three or more, with a kids event in the morning and then a YA event at 2 p.m. on a Saturday and then a 4 p.m. and then a 7 p.m. and then there's something off-site, you know, that we've got our name attached to. The more you do, the more people are going to hear about it and the more they're going to bring people through the doors, and plus, you do a lot of events in a row, you get better at it. I think that goes a long way to having a well-run events program.
Yeah.
And a well-run events program means people come to your events.
Which means people come to your store. Which means people buy your books.
Exactly.
Retail hard libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So Sam, you mentioned earlier that you're one of those people who reads multiple books at the same time.
Guilty as charged.
Yes, yes. It happens, it happens.
We know nothing of that.
Yeah, right? How do you read? Like, where, when, what genres, like, do you read ebooks versus
build
print
us
books?
Your wheelhouse.
Okay. A wide variety of things, mostly fiction, though I would say I lean primarily towards fiction. Yeah, with a tendency towards like really kind of twisty, dense, dark novels. And all physical books. Ironically, although I did lead and kind of create a very successful ebook program for a couple of years. I don't e-read personally. It's just never been a thing that I've been interested in. I signed up for NetGalley at one point thinking that it was going to save me a ton of space in my house. And then I proceeded to use it exactly zero times.
Do you have a dedicated e-reader?
No, I do not.
There's your problem.
Yeah, if you want e-galleys to be a thing that takes over for the piles of galleys in your house, you need to get a dedicated e-reader.
There's an argument that if I'd wanted a dedicated e-reader, I would have bought one. But it just was never, you know, and I actually thought about it a couple times, but it just was never a thing that I particularly wanted to do. So it's never been a part of my reading habit, and I don't think that it would become a part of my reading habit. And I've become comfortable with the piles of galleys in my house. Mm-hmm. I kind of like them now. So yeah, I'm definitely a reader of physical books, and probably always will be.
So you got piles of galleys everywhere, plus all the other books that you, I'm assuming, have in your house. How do you choose what to read next?
You know, it's magic sauce.
Uh-huh.
Okay. No, I mean, it's a mixture of I will read something because a rep told me to and I respect their opinion. That happens a lot. And, you know, there are a lot of really wonderful reps in the Pacific Northwest, of course, who kind of know my tastes and they know what I'm going to be into what they think I'm going to be into. And they say, okay, you got to pick this up. And I've learned to listen to them, so I will often pick up a galley because of that, or sometimes something will just kind of call to me, you know, I'll, like, get a book in my head, and then I'll be walking around all day thinking about that, but, like, I should really read that, I've never read that, and then my brain won't shut up about it until I've read it. So sometimes it happens that way. Sometimes it's an author who's either coming or wants to come to the store, and I will want to read their book first, or at least kind of have an idea of what they're doing. Sometimes it's just pure luck, or it just sounds good to me. You know, I try to read what I want to. You know, in addition to, you know, I mean, I kind of balance having to read as a professional obligation with reading being one of my primary leisure activities. So, you know, I try to keep it enjoyable. I try and read stuff that I feel like I would be interested in. That said, I'm always willing to kind of try new stuff out. I think that's pretty important, both to me professionally and just on a personal level. You know, there's more to learn in the world than I will ever physically live long enough to learn, so I'm just kind of trying to do the best I can, you know, and kind of just soak up as much of that as possible. And sometimes that means really reading really weird stuff that I wouldn't have ordinarily picked up. Mm-hmm. And that's how you find really great gems, I think. But I also am I'm trying to break myself of the habit, but I'm kind of cursed with a desire to finish every book I read. Yeah. It doesn't always happen, and I'm getting better about it, but I still finish the vast majority of books I pick up, even if it takes me like 6 months to drag myself through them, which is just not a good idea. I know it's not healthy. I know I have a problem. I'm trying to change, but that does kind of impede my ability to pick up new stuff. So, yeah.
That's just one skill as a bookseller that I feel like we really need to develop.
Yeah.
There's too many books.
Well, in publishing, there's the term to dip into something.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if I dip into too many things, I never actually read something. And so I get this, like, competing, like, anxiety about the fact that I've been, like, dipping into a bunch of books and then also, like, not actually finishing anything. And so then I feel like I need to finish everything I dip into, which is, like, also a problem. But
I think
yeah,
you just need a healthy balance.
Moderational things. Nobody's ever thought of that, Emma. Ever.
Oh, she's a genius.
Oh my god.
Fuck off.
Inform Aristotle. But I agree entirely, and it's something that I feel like all of us struggle with. So, like, you know, it's a thing.
We get attached.
So, Sam, in I'm gonna make this interesting. In 20 words or less.
Are you keeping track?
I'm gonna count on my fingers. What is the book description that is guaranteed to get you reading the book in 20 words or less?
Man, I would say
novel trying to answer big, difficult questions and not necessarily succeeding, but at least giving it a go. Is that...
That was 16.
16?
I think that was 16.
Nice.
I think I counted that correctly. Nice.
I wasn't even trying. I mean, I think that's a lot of what I kind of gravitate towards is books that wrestle with big sticky issues and don't necessarily guarantee any tidy conclusion, but at least kind of walk through the door and announce themselves. And sometimes I think that they're more beautiful and more successful for their inability to answer, the questions that they raise.
Yeah.
Is there any, like, small kind of weird thing that would tip a book to, like, the top of your reading list? Like, for me, if anyone compares a book to Kelly Link, I'm like, all right, I'll read that next.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think it's pretty much... I mean, this is where my answers just get really boring. I think that it's pretty much just the standard stuff for me. I mean, if authors that I respect or enjoy blurb a book, that's automatically something that I'm into. Often...
But which author?
If... Well, there are, you know, a huge number of authors, depending on the genre. Of course, George Saunders... you know, I love Sarah Vowell for nonfiction. I tend to gravitate like towards books. Like if I've been looking for years for a book that I feel like authentically writes about musicians and music scenes. I feel like they're all kind of heavy-handed, a lot of the stuff that I've read, or kind of cliched. So if there's a book about musicians and, you know, people in small-town music scenes, I'll often pick it up just to see if it's the one.
Have you read any Rob Sheffield?
You know, I haven't.
He's great. Okay. I have a huge crush on him.
Rob Sheffield.
Sam, have you read the Carrie Brownstein memoir?
It is
I love
on
how we both had books
pile.
To recommend.
I'm curious because it's so Pacific Northwest.
Yeah,
like it's
so,
Portland, Olympia, Seattle.
Well, Carrie Brownstein, of course, went to Western, and actually Slater Kinney played some shows here. And I'm a huge Slater Kinney fan, so it is on my list. And of course, I love. Pretty much anything that Riverhead does, I tend to pay attention to. I just think that they're a very solid publisher of great stuff. It is near the top of my to-read pile, and everyone who has read it before me has come in the next day and said, Sam, you need to read this! You're gonna love it! So don't tell me anything, because I'm gonna read it.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack.
So, I'm gonna ask this next question because
Sam's
awful at it.
Thank you.
So, Sam, have you read Station 11?
I have not read Station 11, but I am
That's
familiar
okay,
with
me
the
neither.
Premise of Station 11. Station 11 is also on my to be read pile.
Yeah, it's right up there,
yep.
Right at the top.
Well, you know how those piles
for
go.
For like a year.
Yeah.
We always ask our interviewees what their Station 11 wild book would be, and that can be two different books. So what books would you carry with you after an apocalyptic event? What books would you bring with you on an epic journey?
Yeah, okay. So it's probably two different answers.
Likely.
I mean, so I think for after an apocalyptic event, like, I would probably, if I could bring one book, it would have to be something long that I hadn't read. I don't know, Ulysses, what? Maybe, you know,
really?
Something just, I mean,
I'm okay with that answer. That's a good answer.
I'm just thinking...
long book that people, believe to be very important that I have not read that is on my shelf.
But what if you don't like it?
Well, then, you know, I think that's going to be the least of my problems in the apocalypse. I don't think I'm going to be complaining about that. Although since it is your the Station 11 pick, like maybe I don't know, maybe I'd bring like the collected Shakespeare or something. I hear that would serve me well in the Station 11 universe.
You have theater people to do that for you.
Okay.
I won't do that.
Assume that Shakespeare has been saved.
I would be going for something that I hadn't read before. That was going to keep me busy for a while. You know, that's totally self-serving, and I'm okay with that. I think in the apocalypse, you kind of have to think about yourself a little bit. For an epic journey, it would have to be something. I mean, I was thinking about this. Like, it'd have to be something kind of small and profound. I think that the answer would probably change from week to week. Right now, it might be Lyrics and Poems 1997 to 2012 by John K. Samson. So John K. Samson is the... Are you laughing at me?
That was very specific.
That's the title of the book.
I know. It's great. It's great. Keep going.
Anyway, John K. Samson is probably best known as the songwriter and rhythm guitarist and singer of the Weaker Thans, the rock band from Winnipeg. I hear more snickering in the background. Stop it. Stop.
That's in Canada, where's right?
Where's Winnipeg? Just Google it.
In Tim's defense, I don't know either.
It's in Canada. It is a city in Canada. There's a great rock band that used to be from there. They are apparently on indefinite hiatus now. But anyway, he writes these incredible songs. He's one of those writers that, you know, sometimes you just kind of want to, it's like you want to just immerse yourself in the words. You just want to kind of like roll around in them. There's so much going on there. And he published this little book of his kind of collected lyric poem things. I've listened to some interviews with him where basically he explains that there's not much difference between the two. He'll start something out as a poem and then he'll sort of cannibalize it and it will become a song. And then it sort of morphs back into being a poem again, which all sounds really highbrow and kind of ridiculous, but is the package itself, it just ends up being something that's really wonderful. And I kind of, right now, that's been a book that I've just been, even though I know a lot of these songs by heart, just a book that I've been kind of losing myself in late at night for the past couple of weeks. So right now, if I was going to leave on an epic journey tonight, I'd probably throw that one in my pack. Next week, my answer might be totally different, such is the nature of these things.
Legit.
But
yeah, man.
So there was recently a podcast by Bookrageous that focused on literary things that they wouldn't necessarily be willing to admit about their reading habits.
Oh, man.
If you will. So we're wondering what your readerly confession would be.
Okay, I actually do have a really bad one.
Great.
Which is that I am what you would call a millennial. And I have...
These things happen.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't my...
It's not your fault.
But I might be the only millennial to have this confession, and I feel really bad about it, I promise, but I only got to book 4 in Harry Potter. I'm sorry. Emma's
you're
like,
not. You're
Emma's
actually
like dying
here's the,
over there.
Sam, you are the second person on this fucking podcast
really?
Who have not read the entirety of Harry Potter.
The cream of the book selling.
I know. Booksellers are the worst.
We're terrible. I'm so sorry.
Wait,
I apologize to everyone I went to school with. And
here's the thing. You got to book 4. Book 4, correct?
I got through book 4. I actually got about halfway through book 5.
Well, I understand why you stopped at book 5, because Harry's, like, fucking emo as hell and obnoxious. So, like, I get that. I respect that as a life decision. I mean, you're wrong,
thank you.
But, like, I respect that.
Thank you,
that.
Kim. Thank you. It's not like I won't ever finish. I mean, I might someday. But I just...
Have you watched the movies?
I've watched
the
movies.
Have you
seen the movies.
Okay. I feel like
I didn't have a choice.
I've been doing that with Game of Thrones. Like, that's fine.
It wasn't like I went... Like, on my own specifically to see the movies. It was, you know, I mean, there was stuff. I had to go see the movie. Didn't matter.
You had no choice in the matter.
I had no choice in the matter. You know how this goes.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't choose the movie. Yeah, that's my confession. I am sorry.
Emma's gonna block you on social media.
I know. I feel so bad. She's never gonna talk to me again. I shouldn't have let that one go. Oh well.
Maybe we should move on.
We should probably move on. What is your go-to hand cell?
You know, I've got a couple. One that I seems to work for like everybody is City of Thieves by David Benioff, a wild goose chase kind of set in Leningrad under siege. A young boy and a Russian army deserter who are sent out to find fresh eggs for an army official's daughter's wedding cake, and if they're both prisoners, and if they don't succeed, they will be killed. Hijinks ensue, as you would expect. It's a fairly fast read. It's funny enough. It is engaging enough for people like me who really like a kind of a dark, satirical, twisty novel. But it's also a novel that's relatively lighthearted and joyous at its core. So it's something that you can kind of, no matter who it is, you can say, I think you might like this. I've always done really well with Jess Walter's Financial Lives of the Poets as well. He cuts right to the core of I think, all the kind of, kind of humiliating contradictions of 21st century middle class, affluent, suburban life. And, you know, he does it with his tongue firmly inserted in his cheek, and it's definitely a novel that I kind of return to again and again for people. So yeah, those are two nice, pretty fail-safe go-to books.
So Sam, what's your impossible hand sell? The book that you love but you can't seem to describe in a productive enough manner to sell to somebody else.
Not as tough recently since, you know, he kind of won the Booker. But Marlon James' Brief History of Seven Killings. Man, I read that book. Got to the in galleys. Got to the final page. Was like, oh my god, what did this guy do? and then spent the next few months trying to push it into people's hands in hardcover. And it's a thick book. It was a heavy book in hardcover. You put it in somebody's hand.
Little Life, but.
It is not quite as thick as A Little Life. But it is a substantial piece of work. And then when you start. And once people kind of took a look at it, and when you start describing exactly what the scope of this novel is, I mean, you know, you're covering like 40 years, you're jumping back and forth between Jamaica and the United States, you're covering this huge, this wide swath of characters, you know, old characters, younger characters, men, women, children, criminals, government officials, journalists, musicians, there are several characters who keep reinventing themselves throughout the novel without giving too much away. And you don't really realize it until all of a sudden you do. And once you start kind of getting into that, and people are looking at the weight of this thing, that was a harder sell for a lot of folks. Although once it started winning awards, it became much easier to get that book into people's hands, and I'm very glad of it because I think it's just a freaking masterpiece. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So, Sam, besides your own bookstore, what would you say is your favorite bookstore?
Oh, that's a hard question, but I think if I have to choose one. And I want to preface this by saying that I, first of all, I have never met a bookstore I didn't like, not counting the newly minted Amazon bookstore as a bookstore in this case. Anyway, I haven't been there, so I can say that I haven't met that bookstore. But, you know, I think that there's something kind of special about every bookstore that I go into. And of course I love all of my Pacific Northwest indie friends. I think my favorite though, and this has as much to do with the feeling that I get when I go in there as anything else, is actually the Lake Forest Park Third Place. That is a bookstore that I went into a lot as a kid. I have family members who actually live not far from it, and so we used to visit a lot, you know, when I was younger, and, you know, visit during the holidays and whatever. And so I think it's as much nostalgia as anything else going in there and just having that kind of gut reaction to it. But whatever it is, it's stuck. And I think that, you know, in a lot of ways they've done a really good job over the years with creating the third place atmosphere that they were named after. I think that they have really masterfully created that environment, and you know, like I say, when you hang out somewhere as a kid, it just rubs off on you. So
yeah,
totally. So is there any other literary media that you'd like to give a shout out to, other podcasts or bookish websites where you find out the books that you like to read?
Yeah, there are, you know, I subscribe to all the standard industry places. I do love Lit Hub. I used to read Book Riot all the time. I was just thinking about this the other day, and I'm not sure why I haven't been reading. I feel like I haven't been on there as much lately, but I love them.
It's because Emma started writing for them.
And so I could just feel her waves of hatred for me because she knew I hadn't read Harry Potter, and so I just I was totally turned off to the whole... No, but I really
do. That's new information, actually.
Oh, you what? Don't tell me you couldn't sense it.
Oh my God, they're in a fight now. This is great. Keep going.
No, but I do love Book Riot and have definitely spent some happy hours poking around on there. And, you know, I'm one of those people, I'm not actually extremely active on social media, so for me it's like I go and seek things out sometimes. I'm kind of addicted to the, like, the Paris Reviews, Art of Fiction interviews. Sometimes I'll just go on there and just go through those, and that you never know what you'll turn up there. It's sort of a mixture for me. I'm also one of those strange people who will, like, actually read physical magazines. Like, I'll after the latest issue of the New Yorker, you know, any leftover sales get stripped, I'll totally take one of those home. And I think I've discovered some pretty great writers that way, just reading the short stories in the New Yorker. So
cool. Sam, where can, like, you said you don't do social media much. Do you have anything you want to plug? Like,
totally.
Where are you on the internet?
Totally. You can still find me on the internet. No, one of the only things I have from high school is the award that one of my teachers gave me on the last day of senior year, which was the Luddite Cynic Award. not much has changed.
That is the best award.
I know,
it's hanging
on my refrigerator to this day. But I am on the internet. I'm like the last bookseller on earth not on Twitter, but I am gonna change that situation at some point, and I will be on Twitter in the meantime. You know, I am on Facebook. You can find me at Sam Koss there. Facebook, I've discovered, when I don't log on there a whole ton, and I've discovered that recently it's become a place where my mom posts things that she finds inspirational. So if you want to connect with me on Facebook and or find out what my mom thinks is inspirational this week, find me on Facebook. Or you can just send me an email at sam@villagebooks.com, or just track me down at a trade show or something, and I would be happy to say hi and talk about books with you.
You're an adorable Luddite. I love you so much.
It's mutual.
Everybody go hang out with Sam and his mom on Facebook. It's going to be
okay,
so
now
good.
That sounds terrible.
It's going to be so good.
God damn it.
I am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. I am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't want to forget this page. I got bookmarks at home, but I forgot one for the road.
I have a bookmark that I can loan.
Know how many bookmarks I own? I am now marking my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Page.